This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
You are listening to an Irreverent Media Podcast. Go to irreverent.fm in your web browser to find more dope-ass podcasts like this. Now on to the show. Hey gang, and welcome back to another episode of A Tiny Revolution, a podcast about ordinary folks living revolutionary lives. I'm Kevin, I curate the space, and we back with, I guess now friend of the pod, because he's been on a few times, it's Matthias Roberts and his new book, Holy Runaways, Finding Faith After Being Burned by Religion, is out today on, you guessed it, October 3rd, which is the same day that Katie Herron asked Aaron Samuels what day it was, and he said, it's the day that Matthias's book comes out, obviously. I love Matthias. Y'all probably love him too. But if you don't know about Matthias, let me tell you about who he is. Matthias Roberts is a queer psychotherapist specializing in religious and spiritual trauma. He's the author of Beyond Shame, Creating a Healthy Sex Life on Your Own Terms. And he hosts the podcast Queerology, a podcast on belief and being. On top of that, he holds two master's degrees from the Seattle School of Theology and Psychology. One in theology and culture, and the other one in counseling psychology. Matthias's work has been featured by the Oprah Magazine, Bustle, Women Today, Sojourners, the Seattle Times, and many others. In his psychotherapy practice, he specializes in helping LGBTQ plus folks recover from religious trauma so they can live confident and fulfilling lives. I am just tickled to pieces. And like, what I love about sitting down with Matthias is he's a genius. Like, he and I, like, sit down and we kiki and we're silly and, like, we go do fun things and go dancing together. And, like, that's, you know, he's my friend. He's my girl. He's my sister. And, like, when we really dig into his work, he is so just brilliant. And I can't wait for you to listen to this podcast as well. So, you know, if you haven't already, go order Holy Runaways from, you know, bookshop.org. It really does help. Try not to pay the Bezos if you can't. Yeah. And that's it. Tune in. Get cozy. This is my conversation with Matthias Roberts.
Yes.
We're both here. We're both queer. And not drinking a beer because it's only 12:08 where I am. And I, you know, doesn't feel like the right moment for it.
it's a bit early.
A little bit. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of A Tiny Revolution, a podcast about ordinary folks living revolutionary lives. Back on the podcast once again for, I think this is number three.
I think so.
I think it's this like is number three.
It's right in there. Yeah.
Everyone, it's Matthias Roberts.
It's so good to see you. It's been forever.
It's been a pleasure. Forever since we've done like a content together.
Yeah, I mean, we talked last night, but yes.
Yeah. But like, we, you know, it's like when friendship is different than doing contenting things, which is very fun. And, true. You know, it's very, you know, you don't always get to hype up your friends around cool things they're doing. So I'm excited. First, as per usual, I always ask the people, how are you introducing yourself to people these days? Because
tired.
It's like, hi, I am exhausted. Say you are in a good mood and these people are in a good mood and they're not going to be weird about whatever it is you do.
Yes.
Or however you introduce yourself.
Yes. Y'all can hear my dog in the background. I let her be free during this.
It's okay. Beatrice is a part of this too.
She is. She's what makes this all happen. Mm-hmm. How do I introduce myself? I introduce myself primarily as a therapist these days. That's my main job, day job.
And kind of a departure from like what was like, I don't know, you know, our, not your main gig, but like ever since we've, when we met, you were in school for therapy to become a therapist, and like content creation and like talking about queer faith stuff was the side gig.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And now I've been a therapist for 6 years, which is mind boggling to me.
Yeah. Whoa. That is a,
it's a long time.
Yeah. That's like an act. That's a healthy career.
Yeah. Time just flew by.
Yeah. Shit. Yep. And I think last time we like really sat down and talk was for Beyond Shame when that came out at like the top of 2020. Mm-hmm. That was a crazy time. Yep. Woof. That happened after that.
Because we all just went inside for a while.
Yeah, everything shifted. And now we're back to talk about your newest project, your newest book, mm-hmm. Holy Runaways, subtitle, Rediscovering Faith After Being Burned by Religion. And when I tell you, it's so cute. If you're not watching this on YouTube, I'm holding it up now, but it is it's a good cover. Thank it's you. Really, really fun.
I love it. Here, let me show you. I'm gonna hold up the finished version.
Ooh. Ooh, it looks so good.
So pretty. Yes. And yes. The hardcover. Ugh, yeah.
Yeah. Yes. And also it's like the correct way on the screen. It's not reversed either, so just in case you're wondering.
Good.
But I liked this book because it's one of those books. I'll let you talk about it before I get into what I like about it. But
no, I want to hear what you have to say.
Well, what I liked about it is like it's different than other kind of like books in this sphere, where I feel like it's a lot. It tends to be a lot of apologetics. Or like, how do I look at the Bible from this different perspective and whatnot? And this was like much more narrative driven around, not around like, you know, how am I going to square the Bible, but how am I going to live? Mm-hmm. Like, how do I actually live after and like have any sort of spiritual practice or faith in anything after I've walked away from this thing? And I liked the format too. It's like the kind of like essays that are just it's like one continuous thing, but it's like small miniature essays throughout this entire thing that kind of like flow through. So I liked it a lot. Thank you. What's that one thing you said in the intro that I was just not over? Hold on, I underlined it. Oh, I'll find it in a minute. So how do you describe this book? When someone's just like, okay, so you got a second book coming out. Oh my God, that's so great. What's it about? Which is really annoying. Just like, oh, how do I describe this thing succinctly?
Right? Like, I still haven't mastered that yet, even though I should have at this point. I've been describing it as like part kind of memoir of my experience being a queer person trying to figure out what to do with faith, and part my expertise as a therapist in like religious trauma, spiritual trauma spaces, and kind of combining those to try to not answer the question, but be a companion alongside the question of how do we heal when we have been in spiritually harmful places. Mm-hmm.
How did you start? Which I know is a very broad question, but just like, even for you, like, how did you begin to even like, or how did you begin rediscovering a faith for yourself, like, or like any sort of faith identity after like, you know, you really started like your own process of becoming who you are? And then that's also like in tandem of like going to school to be a therapist and like getting into your practice and working with real people. But for you, like, what does it look like to rebuild something for yourself?
Mm-hmm. I think for me, it happened in tandem with actually discovering that I was hurt. Like, I think that was...
Figuring out, I still have pain.
Yeah. Oh. Or not even still. Like, I have pain. Like, I think I could have told you that I was hurt, but I don't think I understood how deeply hurt I was. And I talk about this a lot in the book. Like I think this is a spoiler in some ways, like I think the way forward towards healing is actually being able to be honest about our pain.
Yeah.
And it took a very long time for me to be honest about my pain because I don't know, like without having other people to be able to reflect our pain back to us, I don't know that we have the capability to actually recognize how deep our pain is. Mm-hmm. Like we need community to be able to show to us and reflect back to us, like, at least in my experience, for me, like people being like, oh, that's messed up. Or, mm-hmm. oh, that must have really hurt. And me being like, no, it didn't. And then taking a second being like, wait a second. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it did. There's actually maybe some emotion really deep down in there. And that was huge. Which then, you know, led to all the classic questions of like, well, what do I do with this faith now? What do I do with all these things? But it really was starting to become more familiar with my pain.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of folks, when they're beginning the journey, like they, you know, they'll start their shadow work because TikTok is like, everyone's getting the shadow. First of all, I don't want the fucking shadow work journal TikTok, you know? Do you know what I'm talking about, Matthias? Are you on TikTok enough to know what I'm talking about?
Well, I'm not on that part of TikTok very intentionally. My TikTok is like mostly like prank videos and hot guys.
So. I should get a second TikTok that's like just for the silly things. That's what I need. Yeah. But when speaking of that, when people begin to do their work and they begin to like question those things, like the pain starts to come up and they start experiencing themselves in some way for the very first time, some people I know for me, like I just, my impetus is to shut down first. Mm-hmm. Is to get like really, really scared and push the pain away rather than allowing myself to face it. Mm-hmm. Because again, just like, we're never taught how to sit with those things. We're never taught how to, I don't know, rebuild something after it's broken.
And again, I think one of the key points here, at least in how I kind of think about this, is like, if that hasn't been modeled to us, mm-hmm. like we can't do it alone.
Right.
Like we need other people to be able to do that with us and show us how to do it. Like, because we are products of our environment. And yeah, I talk about that in the book so much. And like, And I want to be really clear, like, I'm not saying like you need to do it with a therapist. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, it can be helpful, but I'm talking about community. I'm talking mm-hmm. about friendships. I'm talking about mentors. Like, I'm talking about all of these things that I think we need. And I think that's some of the tragedy of this, is like when we've experienced spiritual harm, it is harm that occurs within community. And mm-hmm. therefore, being in community feels traumatizing and scary. And yeah. and so, like, it fucks Ooh. Things up a lot and makes things so difficult when it comes yeah. to starting to heal.
Because, oof. And this is something I think we've seen played out within online community spaces, like in the Twitterverse and the ex-evangelical scene, within, like, certain Discord channels and, like, where, you know, one person's really big traumatic outburst becomes a rallying cry for other people, but it turns out it's somebody else just taking out their trauma on somebody else and everybody getting activated and everyone's chronically online for 3 days trying to put out fires that I don't know actually exist.
Right.
But like, and it's because I think we don't have these really deep friendships to say, it's like, hey, it looks like you're really hurting. It looks like, you know, like this thing that's happening over here is activating you again. Do you realize that? And I don't, we just don't have it a lot of times.
Right. Yeah. And I hold so much compassion mm-hmm, and I don't sure. mean that in like a demeaning way. Like I think, because I have been that person.
Yo, like, Amitabha, who among us, who hasn't been the person to have right. an emotional like, outburst online?
On the internet. Because oftentimes, that's the only place that feels safe enough to do it. Like, we can't have those kinds of out, I don't even want to call it an outburst, those kinds of breakdowns or even honesty.
Yeah, or honest emotional responses.
Yes, in many of the places in our, like, a lot of our in-person or environments. Mm-hmm. Like, that, we can't do that because it's not safe. Mm-hmm. And, like, again, that's what makes this so tricky because, like, there's, I think, a deep goodness in that honesty, but it's also a sign that we have not had enough containing presences in our life to be able to contain ourselves.
Mm. Say more about that containing presence. Tell me what that means for you, because that's an interesting term that I like.
Yeah. So, you know, I think about it, and I use this definition in the book a lot. It comes from an attachment researcher named Abby Wong Hefter. And she talks about love being the presence of attunement, containment, and repair.
And attunement, containment, and repair. I like this. Okay.
Which are, I mean, for folks who know kind of attachment theory, those will likely be familiar terms. I mean, there's this idea of attunement, which is someone being able to feel felt. Like, there's a researcher named Dan Siegel who actually used that language. Attunement is feeling felt. When I'm in the presence of someone, I feel that that person feels me. Kind of woo-woo, but it's very true. I mean, that's what
that's no, what yeah. The ability to, is. Yeah. It's like, when I'm sitting here and you're trying to give me compassion, I can receive it and I can feel it within my person.
Yes. And you can tell that the other person is feeling that too. Like, they're not off in another world. They're attuning to you. But we don't just need attunement. We need containment, which is the presence of someone who can actually hold all of who we are and not become dysregulated themselves. Attunement, containment, and then there will always be failures of that. Like, that is a product of relationship. Like, we cannot perfectly attune. We cannot perfectly contain. Not possible. And so the third thing is the presence of repair, being able to realize when we've made mistakes or be able to hear, like, I've done this with you before, Kevin, like, that really hurt me.
Yeah.
And then we can talk about it and repair. So attunement, containment, and repair. Mm-hmm. Abby Wong Hefter defines that as love.
Mm.
And if we don't have those things, then we haven't been loved. And so when I talk about containing presences, like, the internet is so uncontained, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have strong, big emotions. We put it out on the internet. There's nothing containing about that.
No, it's not something. It's pouring your heart out into a sieve.
Yes.
Right. It's going right through it.
Yes. Yes. And so it is reflective of, like, we build our own ability to contain our emotional worlds by being contained by other people, right?
Ooh, that's good.
And when we have not had that, we are uncontained. So here, no fault there. Like, it's a reality of the world that we are in. In kind of more classic psychoanalysis, although this is not strict psychoanalysis, we continue to look for presences who can contain. Many of us start to find a sense of containment online, but online spaces cannot contain, like, really big emotions.
Yeah. It's just, they're just not built for it.
Yeah.
I could sit on that for a while too. Because, like, that is also, I think that's also, and this is also not to say that, like, real deep friendships can't come out of online spaces, but, like, a lot of times, I would say, like, you our relationship, you and me, and then I'll also think, like, my relationship with our mutual friend Miles, with Jer, these are all mutuals of ours. But those, I think, these relationships, which started online primarily, have the difference between, you know, one, our relationship, which has a container, I think is a a sense of responsibility to one another in some way. Mm-hmm. And not like in a way that's super possessive, but just, you know, there's actual mutuality. There's actual, IRL kind of bonds that we've created. There's more than just like the parasocial relationships that a lot of people create through consuming content and thinking that that's interaction.
Right.
You know, right. Does that make sense?
It makes so much sense. Like it brings, and I think I want to be really clear again, like it mm-hmm. does not mean it cannot happen in only online spaces.
Correct.
Like it does not mean that your online friendships need to turn to in-person friendships in order to be containing. That is not mm-hmm. true. Like,
right.
But that sense of when we're in large groups inherently online mm-hmm. at least, and even oftentimes in person, like cannot contain.
mm-hmm. Looking at you, mega churches.
Right. Like that's where so much of our harm has come from, among other things. And mm-hmm. so that is not to say don't speak up when there is injustice present.
Like, right, of
we
course.
We need to do that in these spaces. And many of us are trying to do that. But there's a lot of complexity in here of how do we learn to do it in a way that actually holds ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that we're not walking into a re-traumatization because of our trauma, mm-hmm. right?
That's really it. Is like, this is why there's such burnout among activists as well, is people do not have the resiliency to continue to engage with something in a way that does not exhaust them or burn them out.
Yeah.
And that... because we also, again, like, you know, the capitalism mind and the capitalism brain is like work. We have to fight. And true, we're all out of time. We all have to fight. And we have to figure out how we're going to do it in a way that's not going to make us miserable.
Right.
Because, otherwise, what's the point?
100%. And this is where I think like Black women, like most always, are leading the mm-hmm. way. Like I think of Dr. Shaniqua Walker Barnes' new book, like The Sacred Self-Care. Mm-hmm. And like
she was just on last week.
I know. Yeah, I saw that. Like in building these practices of resilience in mm-hmm. order to hold us so that then we can do this really difficult, really at times re-traumatizing work.
Yeah.
We need those.
Mm-hmm. I was, the thing that just came to mind, working with the Stop Cop City campaign in Atlanta, there are so many people who are just at their wit's end. I'll show up in like my stole and serve as like a chaplain in those spaces for people who need it. And some people are just so, rightfully disheartened because the city of Atlanta is like continuously, you know, not... You know, the people don't want Cop City. It's been pretty clear, but they just ignore us. But it's like, I see it a lot. I'm just like, this is burning, this is burning people out.
Yeah.
And yeah, I guess like when you're like, you know, going back to the initial thing of part of this conversation around needing people, this is why we need it. Especially I think for like in our little, like, I don't know, slice of the internet around like people who are pulling apart their faith or deconstructing or spiritually evolving. Mm-hmm. That's how I like to think of it. I think everybody's spiritually evolving into something better mm-hmm. personally.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and that's what I was so interested in with this book was not just, I mean, sure, there's some theology in the book. Like I kind of present like at least a sliver of my beliefs, but what I've come to, but I'm very clear in the book, like, this is not what you need to believe. Like, this is what has mm-hmm. started to function well for me. But like, you get to decide this for yourself, but I am far less interested in the theology, far less interested in the arguments, mm-hmm. and far more interested in what's actually happening behind the surface, the what I call the psychology of mm-hmm. healing that allows us to then find new beliefs, find new grounding that mm-hmm. allows us to step into flourishing, whether that's in faith spaces or not.
What are some of those things that you think in like the psychology of healing, like what are some of like the key moments that happen for folks along the way to being able to establish the safety necessary to kind of define new beliefs for themselves?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think this is, and I'm going to give you some answers, but I think this is where things do get tricky.
Tricky.
Because there is not like a three-step system towards healing.
Keep going.
And I think that can be really frustrating because so many of us who are wanting healing are like, just tell me what to do. Just tell me what I need to do. Mm-hmm. And I'm without knowing your story, I can't.
Right.
I need to know more about you. We need to be in community together, actually, for us to be able to figure out like what you need for your particular healing. But I think on a broad level, one is the honesty about pain. Mm-hmm. Two is learning to cultivate self-compassion. Mm-hmm. I think that's a huge one. I think so often when we've been traumatized, the easiest thing to do and the most natural thing to do is to hold ourselves in contempt, to hold this sense of I did something wrong. Even if we don't consciously believe it, there's usually a part of ourselves to believe, if only I hadn't done X. Or when this happened, because I did this, everything went to shit, right? Like we hold ourselves on the hook. And I think learning how to cultivate self-compassion, and I think we need other people for this, mm-hmm. so that we let ourselves off the hook. I think that one is huge. So then we can grieve honestly mm-hmm. about what happened and get angry honestly about what happened.
Mm.
And I think like, those things are the major things.
Yeah. The amount of guilt that we're programmed to keep within ourselves is mm-hmm. horrifying. Yeah. Like, right. And I there's a line from A Course in Miracles I love that says, if guilt is hell, what is its opposite? Mm. And that's really, I think, what like for many of us, it's either patriarchal programming or capitalism programming or you know, our evangelical or like high religion upbringing programming that really teaches us to punish ourselves, to make ourselves you know, kind of like we all fulfilled our parents' worst nightmares, you know. and we feel bad about that even though it's the thing that saved our lives. So like getting, like when I'm working with people, that's a huge one. I'm just like, cause if you can get rid of the guilt, and by that, I mean, if you can give the guilt that you carry enough love, it will dissolve. Mm-hmm. That's cause that like you were saying, that self-compassion, my favorite phrase when I talk about compassion is unbearable compassion. Mm-hmm. Is the idea of like, when you think of, you know, that, you know, like if you can, like, you know, whoever's listening, imagine something or somebody in your life that's so easy to love. And when you see it, you just gush and you just it's like, so, or you see, or like, you just want every good for it. It's like that kind of love that just like, I'm going to love you no matter what till the day you die.
Yeah.
Like that kind, when we have that for ourselves on that intense, beautiful level, which I think is like, that's what the universe has for us. I think that's the kind of love God has for us all the time, and how we experience that love of God or the love of the universe is by giving it to ourselves.
Yeah. Yes. I want to break that down a little bit.
Bring it.
Because I think it is one thing to be able to talk about it. It's another thing to be able to actually do it.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that makes it so hard, in my opinion, is that I'll talk about it as care. Mm-hmm. Good care is exposing of all of the places we have not received good care throughout our lives. Mm-hmm. And so for many of us who have not received good care, to suddenly start to get good care, it exposes everything and we shut down, right?
Oh. Like
we can't actually receive it because we don't know how to receive it. It feels threatening. So even if our cognitive brains can look at that and be like, that person seems really kind and caring. Mm-hmm. Our nervous systems, because we have been regulated to an environment where care doesn't exist, is starting to sound off alarm bells and say, get away. We can't trust this. Mm-hmm. What's the catch? When's the other shoe going to drop? Mm-hmm. Right? Like it starts to expose. And that is where I think like grief work, and this is slow grief work, starting to get in touch with those parts that feel exposed and seeing, oh, here are all the places I have not received care, and being able to start to grieve that work allows us to slowly start to open up to actual good care. Mm-hmm. So it's not just a process of accepting, although it is.
It is
this massive, slow, hard work of learning how ultimately to grieve.
Yeah. It's one of those, it's hard because it's painful, not because, I'll say this from my perspective, from where I'm sitting, there's a part of me that says it's not difficult, it's different. And I had to do this for myself in my own process with accepting love and learning how to do it. I had to tell myself, this is no harder than accepting bullshit. Mm-hmm. This is no harder than accepting hate. Mm-hmm. This is no harder than accept. It's like, and the only reason it's difficult is because I've never done this before. It makes sense that this feels so hard. And I'm still, I mean, we all do it. It's not like I do this perfectly all the time. But that like, the beginning portion of it, if you like, it's like one of those things where I'm like, if you start and you just little by little, like it, and like again, we want everything right now. We want it fast. We want to fix it. And it's like, well, it's not broken. It's just injured. It's just you're the soft animal of your body is in pain. Let them grieve. You know, let the body do what it needs to do. Let it take its time. Demand nothing of your body, as far as like time is concerned.
Yeah.
And give to yourself the time you need to let that grief dissolve into that love. Mm-hmm. And I say that as somebody who's been doing my work for a couple of years. And so, I also want to say at the same time, it is so fucking hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it may be broken.
Say more.
Like you may be broken. I think we need to be really honest about the harm that many folks have experienced, harm that breaks, actually breaks us. But I think about a metaphor. It's not a perfect metaphor, but I think about a metaphor of when our bones break.
Yes.
They heal. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they heal really well. Sometimes they don't.
But that has to do with the care too. Ooh.
Yes. Right. Yes. Yeah. So how, I think, how do we care for the parts of us that have been broken? Because many of us have been broken.
You are convicting me today in the best way. And I say that, and like, I don't feel guilty. I'm just, I feel like I'm getting an upgrade in understanding.
I get your language there. I understand it. That sense of like, we're not broken, we're just injured. I understand that, because especially in the context of a church environment where we've been told we're broken, like many of us shy away from that. Like, why would we want to use that language? Why would we want to call ourselves broken? Like, it is so triggering and harmful. Like, it is harmful language.
And it's like, well, and then when we get out of there and we realize, oh, fuck, I am broken, but not because I was built that way,
right?
Or that's my default. I'm broken because I spent my entire life breaking my back for these people.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh shit. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad I have therapy on Monday, because I got some stuff that I need to talk about. So in your work, like, when you're approaching those situations with folks, where it's just like, oh yeah, big break here. And maybe, like, you know, the break happened years ago and didn't set right, didn't heal right, or, like, you know, is still kind of, like, in need of some care in order for it to fully heal. I mean, how do you approach when you're working with people, like, who want to heal that aspect of themselves? How do you start that process?
Slow.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes when we have experienced pain and that pain hasn't been healed, we find ways of coping.
Mm-hmm.
We have to, right? To be able to live our lives. But often those ways of coping are setting up shortcuts to not touch that pain, right? Mm-hmm. We find ways to just work around it.
That's it. Yeah,
so that pain exists, but we kind of set up our lives, set up our relationships, set up the way we think, all of those things as like a route. We don't touch the pain, mm-hmm. right? And we need those. That's important.
Mm-hmm.
Like most often that kind of pain is so catastrophic that if we were in touch with it, it would continue to be devastating. We wouldn't be able to function.
Mm-hmm.
But then to start reapproaching that pain, right? We have to work with all those defenses first.
Right.
And we have to honor those defenses as good, right? Like, we can't power through them. We can't smash through them. They're there for a reason. And so, like, it's often a slow work of starting to detangle the defenses before we can even start to touch the pain.
Mm.
Like, we're talking years kind of here.
Yeah.
And I think that is some of the trickiness of working with this kind of pain is that, and I keep using that word tricky because it is tricky,
mm-hmm.
Is that it is slow.
Yeah.
And we have to tend with nourishment, because mm-hmm. if we go quickly, and I will say, you know, there's always nuance here.
Sure.
Some of us have held the pain for so long that we're ready to be done with it and can go in and maybe do some intensive work or whatever and, like, let it
and release heal. It.
Like, I mean, like, at times that is very possible.
Yeah.
So it's not an either or. It's not like it always has to be slow. Like, some of us are yearning for spaces to be able to do this work. And when we start doing it, it happens so fast.
Mm-hmm.
But more often I see the slow
yeah.
as opposed to the quick.
I mean, like, yeah. I think about the death of my father, just, like, it's always the example that comes up. But, you know, he's been dead for 5 years now, still mm-hmm. crying about it. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm not crying all the time about it, but I still, you know, when I, you know, have, like, the day that I honor him, I get sad. Because there's so much life that of my life that he didn't get to experience. And so it feels like grieve and then grieve some more. And then when it comes up again, grieve some more. And then when it comes up again, do it again. It's like that thing is going to come up as many times as it needs to, because that's what it does. It's like, and then rather than thinking I should be over this by now, I've now told myself, oh, of course I'm feeling this.
Yeah.
I've said, oh, yeah. Because for so long I've been through XYZ things. I used to believe so deep down that this was true. So of course it makes sense that I'm triggered when somebody says something or I hear a song. Oh, the other day, where was I? I heard a worship song in public, and I don't usually get, like, freaked out by things like that. But I was like, I have to go. I have to leave right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also, like, I went to a worship service because, like, my friend was leading, and I had to leave the service because I was just back in it. And I was like, this is weird. I've never been triggered like this before, or at least I didn't think I was. I didn't think I had that kind of trauma, but here I am discovering it.
Right. Dr. Laura Anderson, who founded or was a co-founder of the Religious Trauma Institute. I had a conversation with her a few months ago around like healing, and something that she said, I am paraphrasing her words here, is healing is learning how to sit with our emotions more honestly. And that means both our pain and our happiness, our joy, et cetera. It's not that we don't experience those things.
Right.
It's not that we suddenly heal and don't experience these emotions of even when we encounter things from our past that hurt. Like, mm-hmm. healing is not being able to look at something that hurt us and say, I don't feel anything anymore. Like,
right.
We should feel things. That thing hurt us. Mm-hmm. But it's learning how to sit with those emotions and not let them like integrate them. So not let mm-hmm. them knock us off base to where right. we get so dysregulated that we need to take days to recover. If mm-hmm. you need to take days to recover, do it. Like, you need that. But healing is slowly being able to integrate those things so that when we see those things, we can say, oh, that really hurts.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't feel good.
And that little bit of honesty, shit changes. Oh, I'm excited for this book. I'm excited for people to, I don't know, get in touch with you again. Just because it's been a while. And also just every time I sit down with you and I hear your words, I'm like, fuck, you are so good at what you do. Like, I know people you worked with. They say you work wonders on them. So, I have, before we, you know, we're not going to close out yet because I have 5 more questions. But I want to say, everyone, please go get your copy of Holy Runaways. It's available October 3rd, wherever books are sold. But pre-orders are literally life. So, like,
yes.
Go get it right now.
Yes. And there's a little, like, if you're listening to this when pre-orders are still happening,
yeah.
there's a little bonus offer.
A bonus offer? So
find out about that at holyrunaways.com. I won't say what it is because for folks who are listening after may get jealous, but holyrunaways.com for
Well, I mean, I'm going. My plan is to, when do you want me to put this out? A week before? I could put it out now. Put it out next week.
I think you should put it out the week it comes out.
Okay. I'll put it out the week it comes out. So people who didn't pre-order, sucks to suck. You're never going to know what the bonus was.
It'll be up till October 6th.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. then go get the fancy bonus material at holyrunaways.com. And to close out every single episode, I've actually consistently for like since the top of the year been asking the same 5 questions every time. And you've answered right. them for me before, but... Matthias Roberts, are you ready to play Just One Thing 5 times?
Let's do it. These things terrify me. Yes.
It's okay. What is one thing you like about yourself right now?
Right now, I am really really enjoying the way that I'm leaning more into my friendships and learning how to do that.
Mm-hmm. That's nice. What is one thing you're proud of?
Just like in general?
Sure.
Okay. I'm proud of this book.
Mm-hmm. It's done.
And I'm really proud of it. Like, I'm so proud of it. Yeah.
It's going to be so good. And it's almost here. Holy shit. It is. It's like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Listen, those contractions are going to get closer and closer together. So just watch out. What's one thing that pisses you off? Can be petty or it can be profound. Doesn't matter.
People who are condescending
mm-hmm.
pisses me off.
Deeply. You want to talk about it? You want to tell
me? No, we talked about it last night.
Stay tuned for. Listen, if you're on either one of our Patreons, you can subscribe to the shit talking conversation. Just kidding. That doesn't exist. What's one thing that you're committed to?
Helping people find flourishing.
And the final one, what's one thing you want to do before you die?
Go to Antarctica.
Oh, sick. That'd be fun.
I know.
Better go before it melts. Wait, they have land there. There's no land at the North Pole. That's right.
Yes.
I'm not a geologist.
Well, I'm not a scientist either, and I'm sitting here being like, yeah, it is the South Pole that has, because it's a continent. It has land. Yes.
Yeah. There's no North Antarctica. Right.
Yes. Yeah. Science with Kevin and Matthias.
Did y'all listen? ASAP science, get out the way. We're coming for your gig.
We can teach in Florida.
That's it. I'm switching careers. In fact, no. What is it like? I read somewhere like they were gonna do like in school counselors, but you didn't have to have like a psychology degree or anything. You just got to be like from a local church, and you can be an in-school counselor in Florida. I think I heard that.
Florida, who the fuck cares?
Oh God, Lord, if we pray for Florida every day. Mm-hmm. Okay, tell people on the internet where they can find your work, where they can buy Holy Runaways, and if you have a joke, that's is where you can put it in too.
Great. You can find Holy Runaways wherever you buy books. I would encourage you to support your local bookstores and not buy from giant online stores. And my work can be found across the internet at Matthias Roberts. And I already said my joke about Florida, so.
That's it.
Yeah, that's the only one I got.
That's perfect. You nailed it. Can't wait to go on vacation again. That was my conversation with Matthias Roberts. If you want to know more about him or you want to get in touch with him for his work, you can go to MatthiasRoberts.com. Once again, the book, it's called Holy Runaways, Finding Faith After Being Burned by Religion, and it is available all the places right now. Go order it. Go get it. Leave it a review on Amazon. They really, really do help. Even if you didn't order it from Amazon, you can still leave an Amazon review. You can still leave a, you know, bookshop.org review. You can still a Goodreads review. It really does help us, so go do that. Cool. Credits as per usual. I want to give a shout out to my friends on Patreon for helping support this work. If you're out there and you're like, Kevin, I like your work, I really like the podcast, I like the content you're making, and you want to be a friend who helps offset some of the cost, because content creation and you know, it's kind of my full-time thing, so be a pal. If you like the show, you know, give a couple bucks a month. It really, really does help. So go to patreon.com/thekevingarcia to get that. Another way that you can support me directly is by going and pre-ordering my new book, What Makes You Bloom, right now. It's available at thekevingarcia.com/bloom, and then you can click on all the options for ordering there. I think that's everything. Follow me on social media at thekevingarcia. I'm on the TikTok, I'm on the Instagram. And pretty soon, like, you guys might be getting a Substack coming your way, if that's your thing, because I'm wanting to write more and just express that way. So if you're into that sort of thing, go to patreon.com, subscribe there, and I don't know. I love you. I hope you're doing good. I hope you're having a fabulous time. And until next time, my friends, take your meds, call your person, eat something good, shake some ass, and throw some ass to get rid of your depression. And remember, I love you so much, and I can't wait till next time. Bye.